This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're here with Kirk and with JB. Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Good evening. We had made it our little way past Ms. Moore 1037 the last time we were together, and it's been such a jumble of things happening around the world these last this last week that if we get started in the news, I don't think we'll ever get out of it. So rather than do that, let's just jump right back in, and we should probably take a quick step back. So we're going to begin on Ms. Moore 1037 because it'll lead us into fresh material. And I think this statement is one of the most profoundly important that we're likely to encounter. It's one that everyone should know. He, as in Yahuwah, made known, Yada. He acknowledged and made us aware, such that we could become familiar with, disclosing and revealing. Written in the Hiphol imperfect, that means there's ongoing consequences. He did this in a manner that was consistent with his nature. And in the Hiphol stem, it says that God is engaging us in this process so that if we come to know what he is offering, we become ever more like him, pitiful and perfect. So he made known. And just before we go on, it's one of the most commonly missed things. It's something that I have the most trouble explaining to people, and I can see them the most irritated by when we begin in conversation. To know. Yada, to know. Everyone wants to know what I believe, what we believe, and I'm constantly telling people, I don't believe anything. Why would I believe? I either know or I don't know.
That too.
Yes.
Yeah. What good is a belief?
I believe vanilla ice cream is better than chocolate. That's a belief. That's your belief.
Yeah, a belief is no better than an opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a preference. Beliefs are not based on fact. If you have fact, if you have evidence, then you know. And if you know, there is no reason whatsoever to believe. Belief is a vastly inferior position to knowing. He made known so that we could know. Not so we could believe, so we could know. Derek Hu, his ways. To Moshe, the one who draws out. Through his interactions with the children of Israel. Now, if he made known his ways to Moshe, where would we find his ways?
in the Torah.
And the book scribed by Moshe.
Mm-hmm. Moshe. Right.
Commonly
right.
known
Where else
as
would we find his ways? Where else would we find his ways?
Deuteronomy.
Oh, yeah, I suppose part of the Torah. I would agree. Yeah.
His Mizpah, his Tablet of Stones.
That's part of the Torah.
Uh-huh.
If you can't come up with any other place where we would know his ways, it's because there is no other place. He made known it when he said he made known his ways to Moshe. The ways that he made known to Moshe are found in one place, the Torah. They're not found anyplace else. You are not going to find the way, Yahweh's ways, as revealed to Moshe in the Christian New Testament. You're not going to find them in the Quran. You're not going to find them in the Zohar. You aren't going to find them in the U.S. Constitution. You're not going to find them any place other than the Torah. So if God said, or Moshe on behalf of God, he made known his ways to Moshe. If you want to know the way of God, you're going to find it in the Torah. That's it. Don't have to look anyplace else. Now, there are other places we can look to find God's ways explained, because the prophets prove that Yahweh inspired these words. They reveal a perspective on an interpretation of what we find in the Torah. But it's in the Torah. And it's in the Torah that we see Yahweh interacting with the children of Israel. We read what God did, why he did it, why he created the universe, why he conceived life, why he made Adam, why he created Yahweh. What he did with Adam in the garden, why the garden existed as it did. No religion, no politics, no government. You know, people say, well, without government, if you're anti-government, how would people live together? They did just fine in the garden, didn't they?
Yeah, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, until they got out of the garden, that things began to deteriorate. So, he made known his ways to Moshe through his interactions with the children of Israel, through his interactions with the Roman Catholic Church, through his interactions with the Pope, through his interaction with magic tablets and Joseph Smith? Hell no. Through his interactions with Americans?
Hardly.
With Muslims? With secular humanists? With scholars? With astrologers? With the wise and political among us? No. If you want to see how God interacts with people, what he likes and what he does not like, what will draw you to him and what will push you away from him, examine his interactions with the children of Israel. And while that story goes beyond just what he revealed and made known through Moshe, goes all the way even to today, where God is still revealing. It's not so much that he's revealing. God has revealed, but we are exposing what he has revealed through and to the children of Israel. And the children of Israel are at the center of God's plan. For all of those out there who are conspiratorial, and therefore don't like Jews, or want to miscast Jews, I'm sorry, but you have no chance of interacting with Yahweh. Yahweh interacts with the children of Israel. You either become one of them, a part of that family, or you're outside of God's family. So, very simple statement, but very profound implications. This next one is amazing. It's the antithesis of the way that Christians and scholars view the God of the quote-unquote Old Testament. It reads, Yahweh is compassionate, Rakum, has strong feelings and an enduring commitment to abiding adoration for those he is offering a reprieve from judgment. And he is merciful, Wachanun, is inclined to bestow favorable treatment and provide unearned benefits with generous blessings. Long-suffering and loyal, slow to anger, able to endure that which is resentful and displeasing in the relationship, a rekamph, loyal, all while showing great favoritism and passionate love, warab chesed, an abundantly generous offering tremendous assistance and rewards to those in a relationship with him. It's quite frankly the God we have all come to know. It's the way God would have to be to put up with the likes of Kirk and JB. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
I mean, to put up with the likes of all of us, he would have to be this way. I mean, look at the God that came to love Dod, the God that put up with all the mumblings and grumblings of Moshe. I had a friend of mine that sent me this list of the Yehudim of Torah fame. Did you see that?
Yes,
it's really good. It was like 40 names long. There wasn't an ace of hearts in a lot of them. I mean, what a tawdry group of characters.
I love the fact that the Hebrew word for compassionate includes has strong feelings. Because people today tend to view being compassionate as accepting. You know, you may not like it, but you need to accept it. That's compassionate to accept it. No, it's not.
No. Would you be compassionate to your daughter if you were accepting of someone who wanted to harm her?
No.
Hell no.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole political correctness. That's the other thing that just leaves people bewildered. You know, people constantly say, you know, people are just, they're not loving enough. They've lost their compassion and ability to be kind. And I said, no, the problem is they don't know what to hate. They don't know how to hate.
Yeah.
And the reason that they're incapable of being compassionate is they don't know what to hate or how to hate. And until you know what to hate and how to hate, you're incapable of being loving or compassionate. It's just nothing but lip service. It's political correct mumbo jumbo. If you don't hate rape and rapists, pedophiles and pedophilia, murder and murderers, then there's something seriously wrong with you. Mm-hmm. If you don't despise the Paul that wrote those 14 letters which comprise a life share of the Christian New Testament, then you're either ignorant, or you're irrational, or you're immoral. So, this is an amazing statement. This is Yahweh is. He's compassionate, he's merciful, he's long-suffering and loyal, and he is abounding in goodness, showing great favoritism and passionate love. And the reason that I suppose so many people view the God of the quote-unquote Old Testament as being such a wrathful and mean God is they don't understand why it's impossible to be compassionate, merciful, loyal, and abounding in goodness, and overwhelmingly kind if you're not extraordinarily hostile to all of the things that man takes for granted, all the things that man embraces as popular and true, because all of those things are counterproductive and harmful to his creation. Most of what mankind does is counter to the intent of God and opposed to what is in our best interest. So, that is why you find the wrathful and angry God in to the compassionate and merciful one. Without that blend, one would be a complete and utter phony. So it's an amazing group of words. Rakum, Chanun, Chesed tells us that God is desirous of treating us like any father would want to treat a son or daughter. Now, for any enduring relationship to work, we must come to a place where we enjoy our partner's positive attributes while overlooking or at least emphasizing their less than desirable proclivities. And that's exactly what Yahweh does for those of us in the covenant. You know, it's one thing for God to be opposed to those who are religious or political or militaristic, who are really harmful to the children of Israel. It's another thing for him to be antagonistic towards the behavior that his children sometimes engage in that is less than advantageous. Because if he's going to be hostile to our indiscretions, then it's going to be very difficult for him to be generous and kind and compassionate and loving to us. So he sets not a different standard, it's the same standard, but he has a means of overlooking the flaws of his children. And that enables him with light to be able to appreciate all of our positive attributes and attitudes while being blinded to, while not even seeing those which are undesirable. Now, we know that Yahweh interacted with and communicated through men who were quite a handful at times, and women who were handfuls. I mean, look at the number of women that engaged in some, bad stuff. I mean, you look at Rachel as the mother of a number of the tribes of Israel. Unfortunately, she died giving birth to someone who the world would have better off not conceiving, and Ben-Oni, and who became Benjamin. But I mean, she was cursed to die by Jacob for taking her father's idol and hiding it because she wanted to keep it and take it with her.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Yaakov's bad behavior and the sense that his first wife was by far the best, Leah, and yet he hated her. And yet she brought him, among others, Yehuda. And even when Rachel died, he was such a twit. Rather than embracing Leah, he instead brought Rachel's concubine, not concubine, I guess it would be handmaid slave, into his tent. Which is mean. And you wonder, goodness, now if God wasn't long-suffering and compassionate, that kind of stuff would drive him crazy. I mean, look at how Jacob started out, usurping his brother's birthright.
Yeah.
Through trickery. You know, look at Sarah when God said this is what I'm going to do. She laughed at him. Look at Lot with all that God did to save him. And then he
despicably.
Yeah, just becomes despicable. So it's pretty common that God has to overlook some really bad behavior. So I think that
they didn't change his word. They didn't twist it. They didn't form governments.
That's just true.
They weren't militaristic going out and killing everybody for their own gain.
Yep.
So the things that are most important to Yahweh
he gives you so much credit for, because hardly anybody cares, and they knew his name was.
Yep.
When you get to
that
point, I mean, well, you have to kind of love those people, and because they're lousy families and can't get along or do the wrong thing.
That's a good point. So what you're saying here, let's just take Yaakov, for example. Yaakov did a lot of really bad stuff.
He wanted to be
but he was never religious. In fact, he was anti-idols.
Mm-hmm.
He was a man of his word. He was always truthful about Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
He recognized and accepted the covenant when he was wrestling with HaSatan. He chose Yahweh. And so he didn't do the things that really irritate Yahweh. He wasn't political. He wasn't religious. He didn't deceive others in any meaningful way in terms of the testimony of Yahweh. And so Yahweh constantly refers to him as one of the patriarchs. As a matter of fact, he is Yisrael.
Yes.
So that's a powerful point. So in him, what we see is what God doesn't care about. You know, so many people today, particularly Christians and Muslims, and I think to a large degree rabbinic Jews, that are so fixated on sexuality, on sexual mores of what is inappropriate and indecent and improper, and you know, they want to lash out at homosexuality. They want to lash out at all manner of promiscuity, and of course the rabbis and the priests and the imams are some of the most revolting sexual perverts in the world and complete hypocrites. But their vocabulary is just anti-sexuality. I mean, the Puritans who came here were, you know, let's wear our clothes up to our noses. You know, we're just going to be pure, and as they invoked their gods' desire to wipe out the indigenous people for money.
Well, they read books from that had every word twisted.
So what we find here is that look at Yaakov. Yaakov had two wives and two slaves who he routinely had sex with. Did God ever say, well, you know, Yaakov, just can't deal with that sexual promiscuity thing. One man, one woman, that's it. Married or not married, this is just revolting. Cannot handle that. That's a no-no. No. So the kind of stuff that bothers God isn't sexuality. It's dishonesty. It's being religious. It's being political. Being militaristic if you're defending anyone other than Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, powerful point.
So Yahweh tolerates what man hates and hates what man tolerates.
That's correct.
Okay, right.
That's the way it should be, right?
Yes.
The purpose of the Torah is to introduce us to the Berith Covenant and then to explain how we can be part of it by attending the Mikrae. Those who follow this path will find Yahweh to be exactly as though just described him. They will find their Heavenly Father as he presents himself, compassionate and merciful, long-suffering and loyal, overwhelmingly kind to those he favors with his love. Those who see him differently, as to almost everyone, as does almost everyone of the so-called God of the Old Testament, those who see him differently do not know him. That's all there is to it. I do think, you know, one of the things that just strikes me is that I love it when the single most important person in God's experience with humanity calls out another man and says, you know, God revealed his ways, made his ways known through Moshe. His acknowledgement of Moshe and his Torah is really important. Now, in this regard, time is of the essence. Even the best of us can try God's patience. For example, Yahweh loved working with Moshe, but since he knew better, as a consequence of striking the rock, he was given a timeout and was told that he could not enter the prophet's promised land at the same time as the rest of the flock. And remember, these unruly sheep had already been substantially thinned after the whole golden calf episode. But it is also true with Dode. Sending Uriah, a covenant member, to his death in battle so that he could take his wife, Bathsheba, was too much for Yah to bear. And it wasn't because of promiscuity. Dode had, at that point, what, 6 wives and 10 concubines. So, did you think that God said, okay, well, 6 wives and 10 concubines is okay, but 7 wives and 10 concubines, not going to deal with that. That's one too many. It's, 17 is a no-go. 16, okay, 17 is a no-go. Was that the issue? Was having concubines a problem? Nope. Was having 6 wives a problem? In fact, even having 7 wives wasn't a problem. What was the problem?
He
was deceptive. Yeah, he sent a covenant member out into a battle, hoping that he would die so that he could have his wife. That's underhanded. That's really manipulative. And so God says, no. We're going to have a timeout for that. That is his striking the rock moment. So, Father, and his beloved son experienced a timeout, a period when Yah stopped speaking directly to the man through whom he had inspired this mizmor. So while both men remained in the covenant and both are celebrating life with Yah in the spiritual realm, they both are so contentious at times that even their work suffered for it. And that is the life experience of the very best among us. For lesser men and women, the clock is ticking even faster. And for those God is particularly embracing, you know, we need to recognize that we're only lovable because of the way God sees us. He will not continually quarrel with someone, nor will he eternally serve as a frustrated caretaker. What do you fellows think that means? He will not continually quarrel with someone, nor will he serve. Nor will he eternally serve as a frustrated caretaker.
He devised the most brilliant plan you could ever imagine. He put it on display as well as telling him what he's going to do. Then he did what he told him he's going to do, and then he told him what he did. I mean, how many different ways you can put it, and they still want to argue with him on what's the best plan. If I was him, I'd be so frustrated I'd want to kick him off the planet.
Well, he's going to do worse.
Well, I know.
But not to his people. Well, there are a lot of his people he will.
You can't wrestle with him forever.
Yeah. If you have a covenant, and that's what you have a Torah where you revealed your ways and your interactions through Israel, and then you have a fella come along and he says, all of that is incapable of saving you, all that's mean and antiquated, and I've got an entirely new plan, and all you have to do is believe, and there's going to be a new covenant, and it's going to be of grace, which are the Roman naked goddesses of hospitality. And that's the new plan, and we're going to completely do away with and ignore the old plan and reckon. In fact, the old plan is worse than something we should ignore. It's counterproductive. But we're just going to embrace the new plan. Would that be considered quarrelsome towards God?
Just a little bit.
What if you decided that you were going to skip not only the covenant and make your own a new one, but rather than answer Yahweh's invitations associated with the Moed Bikre, which are the very heart and soul presence of God is the way of the Moed Mikre, beginning with the doorway of Passover, ending with the camping out with God on Sukkah. What if you were to say, we're going to ignore all of them? As a matter of fact, we're going to call all those things that belong to God Jewish, and then claim that the Jews killed our God and hate them for it, and we're going to celebrate the Babylonian pagan festivals of Christmas and Easter and of New Year's and Halloween. Would that be considered contentious?
That'd be carried in the death sentence.
How frustrated a caretaker of this planet would you be with that kind of nonsense? What if you had an absolute murderous sexual pervert and pedophile out there in Arabia claim to be God's messenger so that he can rob and rape and pillage his way through as far as a camel could ride from his hometown? And that guy creates a religion that 1.5 billion people not only follow, but the followers of that religion want all of his people to die. How would you feel if you were God?
I would be angry.
How would you feel if some idiot called Joseph Smith claims that he finds some tablets that he alone can translate and comes up with a Book of Mormon saying that the Native American population, who were all pagans, were the real Jews, and that they're the Jews of the latter day, when God clearly delineates who his people are? How would you feel if you had a million people follow a science fiction writer who wrote about a volcano with souls being dumped into it and started a religion on a bet?
Yes, it's true.
How would you like to have a billion souls devoted to a religion that has a caste system and that has 100 million gods? How would you feel about that? You've got one real God who has done everything he can to reveal himself, and you've got a billion people chasing after a million fake ones. What if you created people such that they became so full of themselves, rather than acknowledge your creation of the universe, they said it all just happened spontaneously out of nothing from pure chaos as the Big Bang, and that life just miraculously emerged with no creator and no purpose, and that the most important thing in the universe is, I think, therefore I am? What do you think about that arrogance?
Just a tad bit insulting.
Oh, I'm just not going to put up with it. I'm patient, but you've tried my patience. And I'm here to tell you that as it relates to eternity, I am not going to quarrel with someone. And so the only way that eternity transpires without God quarreling with someone is there can't be anyone religious or political or militaristic in heaven.
I like this part.
You've done that for a while.
Yeah, I like that part. With JV.
Even though it will get far worse before it gets much better. The time of quarreling is nearly over. Yahweh has no intent, no interest in, nor motivation to subject his preeminence to an unending stream of contentious arguments, nor subject his sublime character to insults. Depending on whether or not you wish to be removed from or endure the time of Jacob's troubles, you have until Teruah in 2026 or 2027, perhaps even 2028, at the latest, to make that harvest, or hope that by Kippurim in 2033, you'll be able to resolve your conflicts with God. When you Yahweh returns with Dode, the second coming of Dode. By the way, it was a friend pointed out a passage to me. I believe it's in Yeshaya, I think, right around 48. And it talks about Yahweh's return. And it talks about him coming back with Dode. And it equates Dode with God. Literally equates Dode with God. Dode, Dode is as Elohim, it says. How about that for? For taking it to the next level.
And for all those that say we put Dode on too high of a pedestal, I would like you to show them that verse.
I'm wrong. It is Zechariah 12. Zechariah 12. Zechariah 12 says that Yahweh's coming back with Dode, and that Dode is as God. Yeah, your conclusion is correct. That how is it that we put Dode on too high a status when God says that he is my Mashiach, Messiah. He is my shepherd. He is my king. He is my beloved son. He is the one who is right. He is the one I'm returning with. He is the eternal king of Israel. And then he says when he's coming back with Dode, Dode is his God. Now, that, just on the face of it, that's a big deal. Okay? But if you really think about it, it isn't that big a deal. So it's a huge deal, but not uniquely a big deal. Yes, Dode is the one that is mentioned. It says Dode is coming as God in Zechariah 12. But when Yahweh returns and we come back with him, couldn't that be said of us?
Of course, we'll all be light. We'll all be in diminished, affecting material bodies if we want, or we can be his light.
We're going to reflect God. We're going to be his children. We're going to be empowered and enriched. We're going to be seven-dimensional. We're going to be so close to God's nature, and he's going to be as similar to God as God is capable of making us. So the difference between us and God are de minimis. That's the whole purpose. So while it is profound to say that Dode is coming back and he's going to be as God, it's true to just a very slightly lesser degree with all of us. That's the purpose. When Yahweh returns with Dode, neither will serve as Natar, frustrated caretakers over irritants clinging to the status quo. Eternity is a celebration of family without foes. Now, probably it was weeks ago that we began this Mizmor by dealing with rhetorical questions that Dode had posed when which were all presented in the second person. But now he has returned to first person, plural, and is making statements which would include all covenant members. Before he was asking, us, you, questions, what do you think is the answer to this question? Now he's saying, first person. It's not according to the ways we are misled and offensive. It's not Cheta Ananu, our antagonistic actions, that he acts and engages with us, nor according to our errant thinking, erroneous statements, or invalid opinions, lo, ka, awon, ananu, that he deals with us, gamal, al, ananu. I think that is a more articulate way of saying, of conveying the point that we begin with. We said that, God dealt with a bunch of rascally individuals. God's dealing with us, and we're pretty rascally. And so for God to do that, he has to overlook the flaws of his children and celebrate the things that we get right and the things that we're doing that are helpful, while he has no way of seeing anything that is beneficial or productive in those that he does not know and only sees them as they are, evil and counterproductive. So when he shines his light on them, it reveals all of their flaws. When his light emanates from us, we appear like him and are perfect. So that's what Dode is saying here. It's not according to the ways we were misled and the ways we were offensive that he acts and engages with us. No. It's not according to our errant thinking and erroneous statements or invalid opinions that he deals with us. And, you know, Hebrew is a language that is written so that there is no past, present, or future. Well, I couldn't say that. There is always a past, simultaneously a past, present, and future. But there are things that are clearly meant to be projected in the past and things that are clearly meant to be projected in the future. This, therefore, could read, it's not according to the ways that we were misled and offensive that he deals with and engages us with us on an ongoing basis, nor according to our errant thinking, nor invalid statements, those that we've held in the past that he deals with us. The reason that it's difficult for us to know the answer here is that the nouns aren't given conjugations. It's only the verbs. And the verb here is in the call perfect. And in fact, both verbs are in the call perfect, which means that there will come a moment in time where God's going to be dealing with us, his children. And at that moment in time that he's dealing with his children and engaging with us, it's not going to be based upon the entirety of everything we've done in our lives, but what we're doing with him at that moment. So it's like, you know, the 10 statements were all written in the imperfect, so that it's only in the moment we stop doing those bad things, counterproductive things, that we're no longer in conflict with them, those instructions. Well, this is to say that, you know, it's what we're doing in the moment, and God can pick our best moment. So it's not what we have done over the long haul, but what we come to do in that moment in time. So it's we get the best of both worlds here.
Absolutely. Thank goodness.
Yeah. So even after investing half a lifetime observing the Torah, we quite honestly don't understand the half of it. And there remain countless aspects of the world around us that we don't fully understand. Like Dode, we are far from perfect, even when it comes to living up to the standard that Yahweh has inspired us to uphold. So when it comes to our salvation and the continuance of our relationship, Yahweh is simply going to overlook those perfections among his children. He's going to focus on a moment in time where we're right, offering us free rein to enjoy the process of exploration and contemplation and communication. But we don't have to be so uptight. That is so liberating. I'll tell you what, for me, I don't know about for you guys, but it's so liberating for me to know that when you do a program like this or you write this many books, you're going to get some things wrong.
Sure.
And certainly going to be incomplete in everything you say. And you're never going to convey all that's true or be always 100% accurate. That's an impossibility. So what Dode is saying, because Dode was far more prolific in communicating, both in writing and verbally, than we are. And Dode is saying, don't worry about it. God isn't there to say, oh, you got that one wrong. Off to hell with you. No.
Just sitting there waiting for a reason to kick you out?
Right. He's sitting there waiting for a reason to celebrate life with you.
Well,
he's not trying to focus on, boy, you got that wrong. No. He's waiting to enjoy the moments where we uncover something that is profoundly true. Like, you know, Kirk, you sent me a lovely note on your research on several different words, and one of the most interesting of them was oath. And oath is transliterated into English as oath. But in Hebrew, depending on the context, it has some different shadings. It's still an oath, but you know, it's a sign. It's a signal. It's a banner. It's a means of providing proof and evidence that can be used to validate a promise. And so you were out checking on it, and you were taken to some statements that were really interesting. And, you know, you called me and said, I think I wasted your time. I didn't really consider the context, so I apologize for that. And I said, why would you apologize? You know, we should never be worried about being wrong. And we should instead celebrate being right. And in your particular case, I went and translated the passage that you found interesting. And there's a word in there that tells me you didn't waste anybody's time. And when we get to 103:22, we'll share what you found.
Okay.
And that's the thought process of Yahweh. Yeah. Let's enjoy what we get right. And we're not going to hold you to a standard where we're expecting you to go into, to try to perceive and share the mindset and the ways of God as a mortal human being. We're not holding us to the standard of God where it's got to be perfect. It's just delighted we're doing this. So there are some personal decisions that Dode made, and later in these years, that we should all find troubling, and we've disclosed them. But for his benefit and ours, Yahweh continued throughout most of his life to inspire him to do what he did best, to reason and to write. To the greatest extent possible, Yahweh works around our weaknesses while capitalizing on our strengths. I don't think any of the three of us would have a job if that wasn't the case. Beyond that, there's something marvelous being communicated here. God is going to deal with us, not based upon what we have said and done, but instead predicated upon what he has said and done. To capitalize, read the Torah's presentation of the Mikra and answer Yah's invitations to be called out and meet with him. That's the way that God is merciful. He isn't going to deal with us based upon what we have said or done, but instead on what he has said and done. We can actually learn from Moshe's mistakes and those of Dode. We can capitalize on their issues and how their issues were resolved. They were real. Their stories are told, blemishes and all, so that we might benefit from the example they provide, especially when it comes to walking with God who spoke through them. Here we have the opportunity to grow beyond where they were inspired to lead because God saw fit to share their stories and experiences with us. I think we are in a vastly more privileged position than was Adam, than was Noah, than was Abraham. Vastly superior position to even Shamuel. And it's hard to say so without blushing all over the place, but when you think about what we have been given to study and learn compared to what Dode had to work with, I think that we're in an advantaged position, you know, because everything that Yahweh shared with Dode, he shared with us. So we know everything that Doe didn't know, don't we? You think that Doe said, I'm going to share you with you kind of the trivial stuff, but the really profound stuff, it's way above you guys. I'm going to keep that for myself.
I think he shared everything he could.
I think he shared everything he could. So if Doe shared everything he could, don't we know everything that Doe knows that was important? If it's important for us to know about God, and God shared it with Doe, then we know everything that Doe knew. And if we know everything that Doe knew, and in addition to that, we know what Yeshayahu and Malachi and Zechariah, for example, and Yirmiyah and Hosea, even Daniel. If we know all of what Dode knew, plus all of what they knew, how is it that we could be anywhere other than a more privileged position than they were in? So I think we are in an extraordinary place. We can actually learn from Moshe's mistakes and those of Dode.
Yeah.
It's a hugely important reason that their experiences were shared with us. Now, Dode's next three sentences tell the story of God's love for his children and what he has done and will do to keep us together. They speak of love beyond our comprehension and of mercy so far reaching our rebellious nature becomes as distant as light is from darkness. As seven dimensions are from three. And as distant as the sun is from the earth. Indeed, for just as the heavens and the spiritual realm are elevated in scale and dimensions beyond our comprehension, above and beyond the material realm, so too is his steadfast and enduring love, his unfailing generosity and mercy towards those who respect and revere him. As far as the sunrise in the east, where its increasing light is from the setting sun in the west, where darkness follows, so far removed from us are our revolting and rebellious behaviors. As the Father shows tender affection, genuine love and forgiveness for his children, Yahweh forgives and genuinely loves, open-handedly favoring those who respect him. Okay, I was wrong. Dode doesn't know him a whole lot better than we do. But that said, he gave us the ability to know him a whole lot better than we would without what he wrote.
We can know everything Dode knows, but we still won't understand it as well as he did.
Yes. Okay, just think for a moment. This fella lived in the middle of the human experience 3,000 years ago. I'm not sure that there even was a concept among any of the brightest thinkers that, okay, we know that time is the fourth dimension and that we live in the three dimensions of height, width, and depth. And we're kind of stuck in the ordinary flow of time, which is the fourth dimension, and that each subsequent dimension intersects at right angles, something we can't even perceive, and that there is another dimension that will one day be called dark matter, and another dimension that will one day be called dark energy, beyond this dimension that we'll come to know as time, and that Yahweh, on the formula of 6 plus 1 equals 7, must therefore be 7-dimensional. And so the spiritual realm is 7-dimensional, the material realm is 3-dimensional, and it's an infinite increase between these dimensions. Now, we know that. Yeah. Do you think Dode knew it? Do you think that man's experience with God and his ability to reason to think was so expansive that God showed him what, so that he actually understood what he just wrote? Or do you think he wrote it for us so that we could understand it?
He certainly could have. If he could see in the time to write the 23rd and I'm sorry, the 22nd and 28th Psalm, he's born into the future, so Yahweh could have certainly exposed him to enough to get a glimmer at it.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So, you're Dode. You are a smart, rational guy with a great relationship with Yahweh. And Yahweh takes you forward in time 1,000 years to witness Pesach, Matzah, and Bukodim. And then asks you as an eyewitness to an event that will take place 1,000 years later to go back in time and write it into a song so that you can prophetically share what's going to occur as an eyewitness so people would understand it. And do you think that Dode, as with the relationship he had with God, with his mind and inquisitive nature, didn't somehow say, hey, God, this is really swell and everything. I'm going to do exactly as you asked. But how is it that you were able to bring me forward in time? How is it that I'm able to witness these things and go back into the past and you know, not somehow screw something up by revealing to people what's going to happen in the past? You know, what if somebody reads this and knows that's a really bad idea? Don't do that to him. You know, can you explain to me, God, how prophecy works? I'm writing all these prophecies. Could you explain to me how prophecy works? You know, could you explain to me the difference between where I am now and where you're taking me in terms of the spiritual realm? And do you think that that as much as God likes to teach and loves us to ask these kinds of questions, that he didn't take a few minutes and share with Dode? So, yeah, let me explain it to you.
Yeah, that brings up something I never thought about before, but you know, you talk about the 88th and the 23rd Psalm. Those are written from a first-person perspective, as if Dode endured that. And you know, you're talking about taking him forward and showing him it, but you know, we've talked a lot about you know how similarities between Yahusha and Dode. But, you know, is it possible even that, you know, when he didn't just take him forward and show him what would happen to Yahusha, he put him in Yahusha's body and his mindset, and he Dode himself experienced those things. And that's
you know, I've never recognized that, but that's brilliant, JB, that the 22nd and 88th Bismol were written in first person.
Yeah, as if he was experiencing that at the same time.
I had a friend of mine present a case to me that I dismissed immediately, and what you're saying here is that I was probably or could have been wrong. And the case this person made to me was that, you know, the way that Dode is everything that we project on or that others project on Yahusha. What if the Son of God's Dode, the Messiah Dode, the King of Israel, the King of Kings Dode, God's Shepherd Dode, and Yahweh several times calls Dode the Savior. What if the soul, Yahweh's soul, and Yahusha was really Dode? What if Yahusha and Dode are one and the same? And that's what this person shared with me this week. And I said, no, because Yahusha wasn't nearly as combative as Dode. And, you know, he was Dode was more in your face, and Yahusha was a bit of a recluse. You know, he when people ask him a question, they say, "What's wrong with you, moron?" And then you know, give him a snippy answer and then disappear. But when you really think about the personality. You know, the first 30 years, you know, one was a stonemason and the other threw the most famous stone in human history. And both of them were anointed by Yahweh, one in the river, by the Spirit coming upon him. And when Yahweh says that he Masiach anointed Dode, he said the Spirit came upon him and never left him. So the only difference with Dode and Yahusha is the Spirit did leave Yahusha. but then leaped out. But, you know, out of the stem of Jesse, from doubt, both are the branch. If they were one and the same, now every part of Yashika 9 makes sense, because there are statements that in Yashika 9, 80% of it just apply to doubt. But there's about 20% that only applies to God. Now, when Yahweh says, when Dode's returning, he is as God in Zechariah 12, well, that puts Dode now as the fulfillment of all of it. But still, it's a much more complete and wholly transparent picture if they're one and the same.
Yeah.
By the way, when I heard this, I initially said, no, the personalities are too different. No, they play different roles. I'm not buying it. One was a lover, and the other one had no love. So, a lover of women, and the other one had no women. They're really different. One was a fighter, and the other never picked up a sword. One was designated king by God, and the other was only designated king upon his death by Rome. But, boy, they have a lot in common. I'm going to say that right now it's two against one, and I am. Listen, I've said a lot of things that are controversial, so I'm not making this claim. I'm not going there, but I do like to share things that other people come up with that are part of the family. And based upon what you said, JB, and what I was told by someone that knows the Torah inside out and in between, that's an interesting thought. Delicious.
So that kind of took what I was thinking to the next level, but that's an interesting thing.
You mean, JB, that when he experienced it in the sense that he was there and saw it physically, or that he was...
No, what JB just mentioned is really profound. It never dawned on me before, but it is super, super profound. Mizmor 22 and Mizmor 28 are not written in the voice of Dode.
Yeah.
Dode is writing them, and yet he's writing them in first person. I am this. I am that. I'm experiencing this. It's my joints, my experience, my flesh, me taking from here. I'm the one that's separated. He is writing both of them in first person. It's really... it's a brilliant observation, JB.
Wow.
I just never thought about that before until you mentioned, taking him there to see it. And I'm like, did he not just see it? He took him there to experience it. Because, like I said, you look at what he's writing about, and it's written about, it's not in like a, to a degree, it's in a clinical way, in a very descriptive way, but it is very much in a, he felt these pains, it's a song, you don't write songs dispassionately.
Think of this for a moment.
From a point of view of he felt this.
How does the 22nd Psalm begin? Mizmor 22. What's the opening line? Yosha said it on the upright pole. It's the last words that Yosha spoke.
You mean 23?
It's 22.
No, the last thing.
Mizmor 23 is the shepherd. 22 is the Mizmor about the crucifixion. Pardon?
Yeah. My God, why have you forsaken me?
My, did you say? And me?
Yep.
My and me, right?
Mm-hmm.
My and me are first person, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Me, myself, and I? That would define first person. He didn't say, your God, or even, my God, why is he forsaking you?
Or his God. His, why did you take him?
He's not talking in third person or second person. It is first person. my God, why are you forsaking me? Not why are you forsaking him? Me. By the way, it did at one point. God, well, the Spirit never left Dode his whole life. And he did leave Yosha. Mm-hmm. There's a period of time where the relationship between Yahweh and Dode was fractured, where there not only were no more Mizmor, Dode to know God's thoughts had to ask one of the prophets around him. But it is, yeah. My God, why are you saying? So when Yosha is saying the last words on the upright pole on Pesach, and he's citing Dode, Dode was writing in first person. How could Dode write that in first person if he wasn't the one experiencing it? And if he's the one experiencing it, how is there a distinction between Dode and Yosha? And that being the case, well, we thought we were way out there in our appreciation and attention that we're applying to Dode as opposed to Yosha. We didn't even get that.
Yeah, we were just on the tip of the iceberg.
If that. And at this point, I just want to say, wow.
Yeah.
But I would say to you, why don't you come up with another way that the Mizmor 22 and 88 could be wholly truthful when the entire experience of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim as experienced by Yosha was written by Dode in first person? If they weren't one and the same.
No. I never thought of this before, but it's just, it seems so obvious now.
Wow. Wow, dude. Wow.
Yeah.
You have to rewrite all your books.
Well, you know, I'm stuttering here. I'm having my Moshe moment. I'm stuttering here.
Love you.
I'm here to tell you that I'm not going to make this conclusion. All I'm going to do is to say this is something very profound. It seems to point in only one direction. There may be another way of looking at it, but it is certainly that's an eyeful.
Daddy's got to go. He's doing his show, okay?
Daddy came up with a really powerful insight, sweet little one. Oh my goodness. Okay, well, and then we don't have to wonder how Dode wrote this. Indeed, just as the heavens and the spiritual realm are elevated in scale and dimensions beyond our comprehension, above and beyond the material realm, so too is his steadfast enduring love, his unfailing generosity and mercy towards those who respect and revere him. As far as the sunrise in the east, where its increasing light is from the setting sun in the west, where darkness follows, so far removed from us are our revolting and rebellious behaviors. As a father shows tender affection, genuine love, and forgiveness for his children, Yahweh forgives and genuinely loves, open-handedly favoring those who respect him. I used to write with a fellow that's a really, really good man. And unfortunately, the recognition that Paul was the plague of death was more than he could bear because of his long time in Christianity. And every time I read Father being associated with Yahweh, I think of one of the mistakes that he made, which he says, you know, that Father is not ascribed to God in the Old Testament, but just to God in the New Testament. And that's just not correct.
Beg your pardon?
As a father shows tender affection and genuine love and forgiveness for his children, Yahweh forgives and genuinely loves, open-handedly favoring those who respect him. Who is the Father?
No.
Yahweh.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, heck, just look at the, you know, the fifth of the, you know, 10 statements. You know, honoring your mother and father. Who's the Father?
Yeah. Yes. Yahweh is the Father. That is the answer to that question, that Yahweh is the Father. And by the way, the answer to the question as to whether or not there is more of a similarity between Dod and Yosha than Son of God, King, Shepherd, Messiah, Anointed, Branch, Tzedak, Right, and Savior. And as Zechariah 12 points out, and Dod as God, a place that we could all search to validate whether or not we're following this course properly, would be Yeshaya 54 and 55. And so over time, we may find the answer there. Presently, I happen to be, I've just finished the translations of Mizmor 6 and Mizmor 7, and then I went into Devarim 29, which is probably the favorite portion of the Torah that I've translated thus far. Just really rich in its focus on the covenant. But anyway, that may be a place that we find the answer to that question. Is not, you know, there's so much of Yashaya that is devoted to explaining Yahweh's relationship with his people as it pertains to his relationship with Dod. You know, Dod is a central character throughout Yashaya. And so we shouldn't be surprised to find it there. Now, here and elsewhere, Dod insinuates that he was cognizant that there were dimensions beyond his frame of reference, and that the spiritual realm was four dimensions beyond the three he had experienced. This perspective on light and dimensionality goes a long way to explain who we are in relationship with God and what he is going to do to mitigate our differences. Dod also understood that light is the best way to resolve the darkness in our lives, because in its presence, mankind's unenlightened fascinations cease to exist, and we not only appear perfect, we are perfect. While Dod's Mashal are presented as parental advice, throughout the Mizmor, Yahweh is typically referenced by name or referred to simply as Elohim God, but here he is presented as our Father, which is how he is presented throughout the Mashal, the Proverbs, because it best describes the kind of love Yahweh is offering those who come to him through the words of his beloved. Now, before we go on, I saw a program last night on black holes. And when Dod makes this reference, you know, as far away as the rising, increasing light of the sun is from essentially the death of the sun, where its light diminishes and darkness follows. But really, the second is the first is this the most important source of light we have in our physical world, the sun, representing Yahweh in the spiritual realm. And then the darkness that follows is the closest thing we have in our world to a black hole, where light is just swallowed up. It was really interesting to see how supermassive black holes, you know, exist at the centers of virtually every, if not every, galaxy, and how these just monsters are ravenous, devouring light, and how similar that is to a religious proclivity. The religious Roman Catholic Church, Islam, just devours light. It's this giant black hole that sucks in truth such that it's never seen again. And so I think there's even some insight. reasons that the I was so proud of Dode, indeed enamored with him, is because he was one of us, I am mere mortal, who figured it out. If he could, we can, and we have. Especially since father and son shared how this was possible, enabling us to follow in their footsteps. You know, when we began this review in this chapter talking about the statements that Solomon, Dode's son, made about the Inagri, this foreigner who would be observant, and the role that this individual would play in bringing Israel back home. And you know, by reading that and sharing it there, you know, some people might say, well, you're being a little bit egotistical here, you know, thinking that, you know, you all are part of that. But no. Just being pragmatic. Dode gave us a roadmap and this brilliant light on Yahweh's nature and ways and how we could understand and observe the Torah and capitalize on this relationship, rather than being privileged or special somehow for having figured it out and shared it. We're just being rational. We're just taking advantage of what's there. We're just taking it seriously. Dealing with the reality that he has made manifest to us. And, you know, rather than egotistical for suggesting that we may be among those that God is using in this way, you'd have to be an ignoramus not to be in this place. Well, what would be the excuse of not being where we are? Which is following the words to where they lead.
Why would you not like where we are? Didn't you say
why wouldn't you want everyone who's listening to be in the same place? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the only thing that's surprising is how few there are. As profoundly presented as the message has been. You know, I'm often told by those who are too preoccupied or lazy to search Yahweh through his words that they would have responded even more positively had God done for them what he's done for Noah and Abraham and for Moshe and the children of Israel, even for Dode felling a giant with a single stone. And my reply is always the same. We have been offered far more than any of them. We have access to the entirety of the Torah, the Navi, and the Mizmor, along with the tools to translate and study Yah's testimony. We have the advantage of seeing the entire spectrum of history, from creation to the birth pangs preceding the time of Jacob's troubles, and can therefore compare what Yah said to what has occurred, and thereby prove his existence, validate his inspiration. We're not only without excuse, we are empowered with every conceivable opportunity. Of course. Much.
Yeah, Dode only has the Torah. We have the Torah and Dode's writings on the Torah. That alone puts us at an advantage.
And all of the prophets and the benefit of a remarkable Jew named Einstein. It's hard to downplay the importance of Einstein in enabling us to understand who God is, what he's offering, how prophecy works, what the dimensions are that we will navigate as God empowers us to become more like him, how Shabuah is fulfilled, how prophecy even exists, how the Hebrew language was conceived to be full of time as opposed to constrained in time, how the 6 days of creation are exactly 15 billion years, exactly the same length of time, depending on where one is, their perspective, how light and Hebrew with its liberated verbs in time are the same. I mean, think about the concept of relativity even in E equals MC squared. It explains exactly what we're going to be like, that how matter is a liability and a physical body is a liability, but that in eternity, when we are empowered as an energy-based being, that should we wish to dip our toe in the cool water of a spring, to feel the sun glistening off the pristine waters of a beautiful white sand beach,
enjoy a good meal.
Enjoy a good meal. Sing a good song. Listen to a,
have a
song
good
being sung. Yes. Yes. To for us to enjoy being creative, we're going to need to plan a spiritual. What would the purpose be of God creating a new universe if it was not for us to explore in it? And, you know, if we're simply light, then we're an observer of the whole thing. If we can use E equals MC squared and transition part of our spiritual energy into matter, then it gives us the opportunity to engage in it. Experience it. Absolutely. You know, create a better platypus. A world without mosquitoes. You know, I've got some ideas.
I'd just like to see someone try and one up the dog. You can't do that.
Oh, well, yeah, well, you know. when I say such things, I'm just having fun, because everything I can do, God can do better. It's the reality. Yes, when it comes to really unconditional love, and it's just a great attitude, it's going to be pretty hard to better the dog, or quite honestly, grandchildren. Mm. My granddaughter's the greatest joy I have ever experienced. So, yes, indeed. So, it is for certain he is cognizant of our inclinations and frame of reference, even the purpose for which we are created, remembering that we are indeed quite literally comprised of naturally occurring earth and matter. It is for certain, without question, key, that he is cognizant of, that he is yada, that he is aware of, he knows our inclinations and our frame of reference, and even the purpose for which we were created, yetzer, our dimensional limitations and attributes, especially our ability to think and reason. Remembering that we were indeed quite literally comprised out of naturally occurring earth and matter afar, of small, fine, insignificant particles, like the powdery dust of the earth. That's profoundly accurate, isn't it? Gives us it's God saying, yeah, I understand. Okay, there's presently a real difference. You are three-dimensional. I'm seven. I understand that difference. I'm going to mitigate that difference. And so my expectations for you, while my hope for you is grand, my expectations are realistic. You know, when we have a moment where we have a Dodian moment, that's not realistic. He says, okay, I get it. I get it. I understand. And quite frankly, God's not looking for perfect people, because that'd be really boring. Now, you look at the people that God chose to hang around with, ain't none of them perfect. They're interesting characters. All of them are interesting. They all got a little bit of an attitude. They all got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. They're all a little testy. They're all emotional. They're all cantankerous. They're just interesting people. You know, when my friend distributed that list of the Tawdry characters and Yahweh's top 40 list, what it really said is that God likes interesting characters. He knows who we are. Our inclinations, our frame of reference precludes us from understanding all there is to know about light and time and dimensions. But it doesn't preclude us with our nasama from thinking about them, from pondering them, from doing what we did a moment ago. In fact, I'm not all here because I'm still back there. I really am still back there. The possibilities of that, what it would mean to us, how it shapes Yah's vision for Dod, and how important this man is into the very center of God's purpose and covenant. And it's just amazing how little he's known. You know, there's the statue of him, which shows him all tweaked and horribly stretched out of proportion, uncircumcised, and naked.
Roman version of Dod.
Yeah. And
very Romanesque looking.
What else?
Statue, if you ask
you
me.
Know, people tell the story of David and Goliath.
Slaying Goliath. That's all most people know of Dod.
Yeah.
He killed a giant, and he sent a man off to die so he could marry his wife. That'd be about the only two things most people could name about Dod.
Yeah, and there's some things about Dod that'll curl your toes. I mean, like when Saul died, and one of the things Dod says is, you know, I want his daughter back as my wife. I went killed, and he took the foreskins of 100 Philistines. For us, you know, he says, I earned her, I want her back. I mean, wow, that's a weird story, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But,
not
you know,
there's a Pauline, Christian, perfect man that...
No. And it's a man that, you know, where Paul says, I wish you were like me and weren't married. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Queer as a $3 bill. Dod liked the ladies, and he wanted his wife back. And Dod thought it was an honorable thing to do, not only to have killed the 100 Philistines, and I've got no issue with that. They were disgusting, and they were a fungus trying to destroy God's home and people.
That's
the right thing. That's the right thing to do. Now, understand. Do not be violent. Don't go off and kill anybody. You don't have any sanction to kill anybody. You know, if you're living in Israel and today's incarnation of the Philistines, the only an attitude, not ethnicity, the Palestinians come at you as a suicide bomber or wielding a knife, you can go full Dod on them. And that's not a problem there, but you got to be careful of anything more than that. But, you know, this is a guy that not only restrained and thwarted the enemy of his people, but he as a memento of that, so they would know the difference between them and the Israelites, he has a memory of that. He says, all right. You're just like Goliath, you uncircumcised, foul-mouthed beast. Yeah, that was his way of showing. So this guy is—he's just really provocative. He's really interesting. I just think it conveys the idea that God likes characters. You know, even Yosha, and this is back to the point where I appear to be on the wrong side of this equation, is that even with Yosha. Dod had personality. You know, when asked, you know, should we pay taxes to Rome? He says, well, whose image is on it? Well, see, well, they give to Caesar. What's to Caesar? I mean, the things that
turn over
says,
the tables.
Right, turning over the tables because, you know, there's all sorts of coins on those tables that have pagan gods' likenesses on them. Then, you know, you're making a house of thieves here. Of of telling Shimon Kefir, Satan, get behind me. I mean, when to his touch, who touched me and why'd you do it? On the road to Emmaus, the guys are saying, man, it was just amazing what happened in Jerusalem on Pesach. You should have been there. He says, you morons. Sausage, you don't know. And he had an attitude. Right? Yeah. So, God likes characters, and God is, fact is, God's a character. I mean, how many times have we read stuff? I think God is just busting up saying it.
Oh, yeah. I swear, the more I translate in it, Elijah's become one of my favorite people to read.
Yeah.
He's got my sense of humor.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He has a sense of humor. And it's like the Dode had a passion. You know, okay, so, yeah, he was required to bring 100 proof that he rid Israel of 100 disgusting Philistine invaders and terrorists. And he brought 200, you know. 100 is good. 200 is better.
Better.
Yeah, I think... Guy was a character. That's what I think is being conveyed here, is that God's a character. And you know, I want to just reemphasize how important it is that we are in a better spot than Dode was in. And largely because of a guy that knew there was a God, didn't know him, but knew there was a God. Albert Einstein. You know, clearly a Israelite. There's no doubt about that. That the smartest man of the last 100 years was Jewish. And bottom line here, God is energy and we are matter. Since the latter came from the former, we should not be surprised that they are actually the same thing, with our relative capacity being all that separates us. It is vividly explained by Albert Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, in which matter must be multiplied by the square of the speed of light, which is 2.99 times 10 to the 8th meters per second, thereby differentiating our capabilities by a factor of 89,874,044. Billion to one. So that's
a little bit of a discrepancy there, but
right. So those are billions, trillions. What's after a trillion?
About quadrillion.
Quadrillion?
I think so.
Okay, and what's after quadrillions? Because it's 89 of something greater than a quadrillion.
Yeah,
so it'd be 874. Quadrillion, 44 trillion, but it's 89 times that.
Mm-hmm. That's a heptillion.
Heptillion.
Okay. My favorite is a gazillion when numbers get over
it.
Really
great.
It's 89 gazillion.
A lot.
To one.
Unless you're over a couple trillion, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Billion here, billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. This extreme equivalence lies at the core of what God has a promise to do, to enrich, to empower, and to enlighten us. Aware of this difference, Yahweh has calibrated our interactions such that he values what we get right much more than what we get wrong. Frustrates him. I suspect this is what Dode was suggesting when he wrote that God was long-suffering with regard to his children.
Yeah, I highlighted that. That's really good. Absolutely right.
Now, I know that, Kirk, you did a lot of work on 22, and we're just not going to make it to 22 tonight.
No, we can get this next week.
Okay, and quite frankly, I'm not quite sure how to focus based upon
I think
the possibilities of tonight. And I don't even know that I want to go back to that possibility anytime soon because it's almost disorienting, isn't it? I don't know if it's unifying or disorienting.
It is to me because I was thinking about, you know, my perspective for a long time now has changed to this is Yahweh's soul. He's providing the lamb like he did with Abraham. So now it's Dode. It's going to take a little while for me to wrap my head around that and see what, okay, if this and that or, but the words will lead you where you want to go.
Yeah, it's clearly the similarities between the two.
Yes.
As presented in throughout the Yes Testimony, but particularly in Yeshayah 9. But the similarities between the two are overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, one is clearly a foreshadow of the other. One is the epitome of everything that God is looking for. And, you know, one is the shepherd and the other is the lamb. There are just overwhelming similarities. Why Christians, when every time there's a prophecy on Dode, even when Dode's name is mentioned, they always apply it to Jesus. And then I said, this is Dode, and they said, well, so they're talking about Jesus. No. Wait a minute, it says Dode. Dode doesn't say Yosha. But in a way, Yosha is very, very similar to Dode. And the focus should be on Dode, not Yosha, that being the case, because we know so little about what Yosha said and did, and we know so much about what Dode said and did, that if they are more than just one being symbolic of the other, and actually are, to some degree, one and the same, then our focus still ought to be on Dode, because we know infinitely more about him.
Yosha then is quoting Dode. Because he's
really interesting to me, though, is think about it like this. The similarities and parallels between Dode and Yosha, and then also the similarities and parallels between King Saul and Shaul, and the proximity of time between those two.
Yeah.
It's almost like history repeating itself in reverse.
Well, I think the entire purpose of the Shaul, the King Shaul episode, because it has so little influence on the outcome and humanity and in Yah's nature, it serves as the harbinger, as the symbol of the single greatest plague humanity would ever suffer.
Yeah.
And so the struggles between Shaul and Dode are the same struggle between Yosha and Shaul, the Christian Paul.
There's just so many parallels between that whole relationship and that. Like I said, it's history repeating itself in reverse. Yeah, whereas King Saul came before Dode, Yosha came before Paul, but the conflicts are pretty much identical.
And both were demon-possessed.
Mm-hmm. If the same soul was in Yosha and Dode was the same demon in King Saul that was the same demon that was in Paul.
I think it is likely, but keep in mind that the demon that was in Shaul was far less harmful than the demon that was in Shaul, the wannabe apostle. I mean, it's like, okay, I'm going to practice on this guy. But it's interesting that the guy who kept Shaul's demon at bay was Dode.
Yeah.
It's Dode that kept Shaul's demon at bay. And Shaul's demon could not manifest itself any more aggressively because of the influence of Dode. And so with Shaul being a witness to Yosha, kind of in the background in Jerusalem, and never engaging with him, but then coming onto the scene a number of years later,
to keep him in check.
Well, there is something to keep him in check. It's just that no one avails themselves of it other than us.
Through what?
Yeah.
dote. Dote is the way to keep... I mean, how many times have we said the antidote for Pauline Christianity is dote? Dote is living proof that Paul was wrong. They're in absolute conflict with one another. So just as Dode's lyrics and life kept the demon that possessed King Shaul in check, it's Dode's lyrics and life that keep the demon of the wannabe apostle, Shaul, Paul, in check. It's just that people aren't
as many people
aware of them. Yeah, they're just not as aware of it. All right, gentlemen, my older vocal cords, they wear out about this time of night, and it's been a full week. I know it has been, particularly for you, Kirk. Our best to Terry. We hope you hear good news. Please share it when you know more. I understand that you're not going to have, she won't have the procedure for another week, and won't know for a week or so after that. Yeah, so we're still a little ways from knowing, but we're hopeful that it's good news.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Shabbat shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you very much, JB, for bringing us such a bombshell.
Wow. Ah, thanks, everybody. I was planning on it. It just kind of came to mind, and it was like, yeah, that's me. I'll just say that's the chair. So, I'm glad I spoke up.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that first person thing led me right to what my friend had shared with me. And it's so much interesting how somebody puts a little bug in your ear, and then somebody says something later, and if it hadn't been for that, you'd never picked up on it.
Yeah. I said, you ended up taking it a step further with that than I had thought of it, but it made sense once I was there.
Yeah, and not on my own initiative. I was connecting the dots between two people. And those words lead to a very interesting place.
Yeah.
I'm not prepared to go there yet.
I'm definitely wanting to check more into it.
Yeah, I want to think about that. I want to do a lot of them, and maybe there's more to that than we're seeing at this point. But it certainly is provocative, and there is no way to discount that Mizmor 22 and 88 are not only in first person, but that Yahweh and Yosha both quote Dode, and that Dode speaks in first person about the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Makudim. Can't get around that.
I'm not willing to draw a conclusion yet, but I'm interested in examining the repercussions of, you know, looking into that.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely want to look into that more. I ain't going to make any definitive statement at this point, but I definitely am curious now.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of pieces that fall into place, that being the case, but I don't know. There's also some issues that don't equate to for me. For example, Yosha's mission was one and done. Perform as the Pesach lamb, and then it's over. And we've never seen a set case before where a unique soul was brought back into human form. Now, we're going to see it with Elia coming back, his form, it's going to be E equals MC squared. It's going to be his form in a created body. But you know, Dode's return is a Dode's soul in a physical manifestation that's created out of the energy and matter of our time, not of his time. So I guess that's not really much of a problem. But there were some differences in personality and style. But one of the things we don't know the life of Yosha pre-30 years. Yeah. We just don't. And quite frankly, we know so little about what he said and did, apart from what was prophesied about it, because Even the eyewitness accounts were so badly maintained.
Lacking.
Yep. So. Anyway, one thing we know for certain.
I definitely want to look more into it.
Yeah, one thing we know for certain is that Yosha claimed to be the son of man, and Yahweh called Dod the son of God. We have a religion that's the most popular religion in the world that is based upon the notion of Yosha, Jesus, being the Messiah and therefore the Christ. And yet, it's Dod that was specifically anointed as the Messiah by Yahweh. So we do know for certain that Yosha is not coming back with Yahweh, but the Dod is.
Yeah.
So we were already way, way, way down this road on how important that relationship is. Whether or not there's some Dodian influence within Yosha, certainly the possibilities. It's certainly, we know for certain with Mizmor 22 and 88 that Dod experienced it on a first-hand basis.
Yeah.
And part of that could be, you know, some of Dod's writings, he said, okay, I've had enough of this. Let's go on with the next phase. Mm-hmm. You know, having personally lived through that, now we understand some of his consternation at his enemies. Because now his enemy, if he is enduring Yosha, his first person, then Shaul is the foremost enemy in the history of Dod's experience.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to the one you were working on with what's the word for black? You know, who's this guy?
Pardon?
Gosh, my mind is going blank. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, you've got a lot to take care of. You can send me a note, and we'll deal with it next week. I'm tired as well. It's been a full week and a mind-blowing hour and a half, almost 2 hours. All right. So I thank my friend and JB and all you guys and for the family, and we'll resume this next week. Good night, y'all.
Good night.
All right. Good night.